From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on the train, a public train in New Jersey. Maybe you saw the video from a couple of weeks ago. It quickly went viral with headlines lampooning a man for shaving on the subway. Thousands of commenters mocked the man for shaving in public, with some of the used shaving cream landing on the floor of the subway train. But after more than 3 million views of that video, the Associated Press tracked down the man named Anthony Torres. You see, he had been homeless. He was trying to move forward with his life. He was on the way to visit a brother, and he wanted to look presentable. Said he didn't want to look like he had been in a shelter. By then, people had already declared that Torres was an animal. Nasty. Disgusting. Well, he told the Associated Press, quote, "My life is all screwed up. That's the reason I was shaving on the train." He has worked a wide range of jobs over the years. He told the AP he's been in casino security and construction. He's followed jobs from New York City to Florida. He has slept in motels and bus depots. And when he found out that that video of him shaving had gone viral, Torres told the AP, quote, "I never thought that would happen. People making fun of me," end quote. A question for us this hour. Who are we? Who do we want to be? What do we really know about one another? My guests have their own stories to share, and let me welcome them now here in studio. Nice to see Don Adams back. Talked to you a couple months ago, so Don, welcome back. How are you?
Thank you, sir.
Very good to have you. Patrick Braswell also here. Patrick and Don are both part of the leadership of Rochester's Homeless Union. Patrick, welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also here to share some personal stories, Cornell Davis. Cornell, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And James Murphy is a Catholic worker from St. Joe's House of Hospitality. James, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I want to start just by asking all of our guests to tell us what they thought when they encountered this story. This man shaving on a subway train, mocked in millions of views before the world sort of figured out the story. And now there's a nice little addition to the story. It's that he's been getting a lot of sympathy, praise, support, and there was a Kickstarter started when someone in Washington, D.C. saw the story and was offended at the negative comments. They started a Kickstarter for Mr. Torres, and they've raised more than $40,000 for him. He says he's grateful for that. But I'll start with you, Don. What did you make of this story?
It's sad to see that as human beings, we are stigmatized because I may not dress like you. I may not look like you. Like you said, we all have a story to tell. And because I don't do like you, don't judge me. And when I heard this story, I thought about him being judged because you don't know the whole story. And when you don't know the whole story, we have a tendency to stigmatize people. Well, I think this and I think that. But you also have to understand, we're human beings. We go through all the time. I may not know, but if I listen to your story, I may not dress like you. I have a heart like you. I hurt. And the thing of it is this. We all supposed to have a heart for each other. I am my brother's keeper. I am supposed to listen to my brother. But like I go back to say, we stigmatize one another. And it's not right. It's not good. Because when I judge you, God judges me. I don't know. I may see you on the highway. You may have to bring me a glass of water. There's an old saying. If you need me once, you'll need me again. And I believe that's a true saying because we don't know what we're going to go through. I may be up today and down tomorrow. But the way that this world is, we have a broken system. Nobody wants to fix the system, and it's going to take all of us to get the system fixed. And because we sit there and today, well, I went this here and I got this job and I got that job. You may lose that job today. We don't know. We're supposed to live together. We're supposed to feel each other's pain. We're supposed to pray for one another. But it goes back the same because you have a broken system here, sir. This has caused most of it.
Hmm. Patrick, what did you make of that story?
Well, actually, I'm able to relate to Mr. Torres. I mean, in the past, I've been in situations where I was homeless, and I was unable to do the things that I normally do, and I was broad. I got my moral standards and values, and one of them was my hygiene. I mean, I don't like dressing with wrinkled clothes and stuff like that. To this day, I still don't, but I got an iron to the house, but I don't use it anymore because I went through a period of my time where I wasn't able to iron my clothes before I left the house because I didn't have a house. So just Mr. Torres was just trying to make himself normal. He wanted to be presentable to society. And that's a real important thing for certain people. So him shaving on the train, he was getting it done what he needed to get done. To look down on a man to try to take care of his hygiene, regardless of where you're at, what he's doing. I mean, it's a proper place for everything. But when you're homeless, you're in a situation. So you got to make the best of what you got. And just like last night, which I felt really bad, I was doing an outreach, and I was up by the bus station. Well, bus thing, you know, the box where they wait for the bus. Mm-hmm. And I was speaking to three homeless individuals. And a group of people were walking by, and they were all dressed, just left a restaurant, all men, one woman. And as they passed, I said, "Hey, how you ladies and gentlemen doing?" And they just totally ignored us. You know, I was there because I just got off work. But I guess I was part of the crowd as far as they, you know, because these people, they're there all the time. And as they were walking away, I was hearing the remarks about them speaking about, which I was a part of it, because I was there actually asking the guys how they were doing. If you need anything, let me know, you know.
What were they saying?
They were saying that these guys need to get a better life. They need to help themselves. They need, just remarks. Actually, I can't really say what they were saying on radio, because I guess when I said, "How you ladies and gentlemen doing?" they was expecting me to probably ask them for money. So they just like shied away, like, actually backed off the walkway and kept walking, you know? And it was me being nice. How you doing? And then it's a stereotype that they look at a homeless man that he's not even human or something, which I've dealt with a lot of homeless individuals because I've been homeless, so I'm able to relate to them. It's a very intelligent group of individuals that find themselves that run into an obstacle in their lives, and it provoked them to be homeless. So I can relate to Mr. Torres.
And Patrick, when you hear them, well, first of all, when you see them ignore you, and you see them walk away and you hear them making those kind of remarks, you have been homeless and now you're working with people who are homeless. Mm-hmm. Do you still feel that? Does that hurt you? Do you see it hurting others around you?
Mm-hmm. There's a, you know, like I said, sometimes I see the shame in an individual's face because they're in a position where they can't help but being in that position. Nobody woke up this morning and said, "I'm going to be homeless." You know what I mean? It's just things that occur in people's life that pushes them in the street, or they got pushed in the street. Like right now, we're working and under sanctions. When a person go to the Department of Social Services, they give them a list of appointments to attend. Stuff like that, and a couple minutes late here, a couple minutes late there, they sanction you for 30 to 120 days. So I've heard even more than that, where a person not getting the things, they're not going to give you the provisions that you're actually entitled to because you missed an appointment or you didn't bring proper documentation. So they won't help you for like 30 days. You can't get nothing. So a person with no income has no other choice but to be on the street. You know, they're not going to help you pay your bills if you actually in a place when you don't follow what they call complying with the program. But normal people in everyday life, you know, they run into things that occur like this morning. I woke up, normally I wake up like 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. I woke up like 9, somebody knocking on the door, and I'm thinking, who's knocking on my door this time of morning? Because normally I'm just like a wake up. So people cannot at all times be precise in appointments and stuff, in the sanctioning individual, and have him to run through these obstacles that are put in front of him, like being homeless. It's ridiculous. Something needs to be done about it. The homeless union right now, we're fighting sanctions and getting petitions. We're actually doing a lot of different things to prevent individuals to be in a situation such as Mr. Torres on the train. Well, they're going to shelters. The shelters are always full, you know. You asked earlier about how many people do we think are homeless, you know. And you get a number, say, 800, 900, you know, 900 people a night, which in reality, those people are in shelters. But sometimes I get on my bike and I ride around and do outreach or get in the car with whoever and we go do outreach, you know. And I know a lot of other spots that people are homeless. Those people are not counted because those people are not seen. They're somewhere in an abandoned building or somewhere with a tent popped in a private, you know, a place where they can't be seen because they don't want to be in situations where, because they're walking the street all night, and then they get stopped by the police or somebody talking about them. They're on their own, basically hidden. They'll come out and they go to the shelter to eat, you know, and then they get what they need out of society and they go back with no place to wash themselves, wash their clothes because they don't have the income to do so. It's really sad. It bothers me on a daily basis. And I'm so appreciative that we were able to organize a group of individuals that feel just the same as I do, because I've been working all my life. And I ran into a point where everything just went haywire. Maybe that's the act of God. Most people say, you know, maybe that's what God wanted you, because he strips you of things for you to do his work. You know, that's what I've been told. So I've been out here in our society recognizing the fact that it's a lot of people, especially here in the city of Rochester. There haven't been many other places, you know. My work is here is in Rochester. And it's sad, and something needs to be done about it. And we're going to do something about it. We've organized a group called the Homeless Union, Rochester Homeless Union. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing people. We're talking to legislative members. You know, we're protesting. We're doing a lot of different things in order to bring awareness to our society that there are problems. It's like, you know, Don was speaking about the system. The system is, in fact, broken. But I look at it on a different level. You know, because I like to look into things. I just don't completely say something without having the knowledge of what I'm talking about. Sanctions, the way I see it in the city of Rochester, and we've got statistics, you know, which is, holy, it'll blow your mind. I look at it as the way for the city of Rochester, maybe, or DSS, they're giving people, they're just holding something out, say, you can get this, but they're pulling it away from, they're not going to really give it to you. So they give you a list of things to do, which is virtually impossible. If you don't have an income, especially if you don't have a place to stay, you can't make appointments. You can't get, you know, you can't, who's going to give you money to get on a bus if you don't know anybody? You know, because I'm not from here, so my association with relatives and stuff like that, they're far. You know, I've been on my own since I was like 14. Anyway, you can't make these appointments. Somewhere you're going to be late. People have woke up in the morning and been late to work. And they didn't get chastised because you were late to work unless it's, you know, unless you do it all the time. You know, being late every day to work. But being late once, I'm not going to get fired. For being late once, I'm not going to not be able to gather the things that I need to get, you know, financially to get my income that week. And that's Department of Social Services doing to a lot of people. And I'm asking everybody that I can to the politicians, mayor, people that, you know, the developers and stuff like that, to give everybody an equal opportunity to have a life here in the city of Rochester, simply because it's the majority of the individuals here are low income. People are not able to pay $700-$800 a month for a one bedroom apartment or $500 a month for a single room. So the housing at this particular point in Rochester is a ridiculous amount. You're paying like for a room, close to $500 for a room. And if you do make it through social service without being sanctioned, they give you approximately $440. So all your money goes to that room. And the majority of those places are slummed because social services, you know, deal with these slum lords. I hate to say it like that, but that's in fact true. You're putting them in a room for $440. You're taking all their income and you put them in an area which I ain't gonna, might as well say the hood. And outside your door is all kind of drug activity, violence going on. When you open your door and you walk outside and you don't really want to be there, even if that's not the type of person you are, eventually you're going to become that type of person. Because if you sit up, I tell you what, if a dog's used to being caged, you know, and you pop that cage, that dog takes off running around. He don't know what to do. He's been in that cage. So you're putting a person in a society where all this is going on, which is just a cage. Now, that's all he knows. That's what's happening here to people. And that's making them homeless also because when they're put in that position, they get strung out in addiction or they don't have no sense of being. That's what it is. And I, myself personally, try to educate a lot of individuals that I come in contact with and let them know that there's somebody, you know. Don't feel ashamed. Don't feel bad because you're in a situation. You can prevail, you know, and this is how you should be able to do this and try to lead them the way and direct them to the resources that they need to be helped. To help develop them and to progress.
We're going to talk about that coming up here. What Patrick and Don, especially as leaders of the Rochester Homeless Union, want people to understand. If you know someone in need, if you know someone who may be recently homeless or struggling or wondering what resources are there, we'll talk more about that. Cornell Davis, why don't you tell us a little bit about your thoughts about the story that you saw on the train?
My feelings based on the train incident is, I think it's a very there's a lack of concern, a lack of compassion. And I think that's what the major problem is compassion isn't in the right places. You know, I mean, that's my feeling on it.
Yeah, I suspect then you weren't surprised to see
he
was
mocked. Being homeless myself before, I started out at Sanctuary Village where they bulldozed our tents and left us with nowhere to go. And somebody in the community donated a building, which we then named, or they named Sanctuary Village on, I think it was Canal Street. And they placed us there from our place where the tents were, they placed us there. And from there, you know, my life has gotten better. You know, they hired me at Sanctuary Village. I ran the office. And I've done a lot of volunteering, and I do a lot of volunteering to this day to give back what was given to me.
Cornell, have you felt at any point in your life, especially previously when you were homeless, have you felt judged or shamed or misunderstood?
Oh, the homeless are always judged. You know, they're always looked down. They're looked down upon, always, regardless who they are, where they come from. And that's why I say a lot of compassion is lacking in society. Because if I'm walking down the street or somebody's walking down the street, they walk past where we were living in the tents. You know, they would throw stuff, you know, over there, you know, and talk junk to people and why are you here or get out of here. And I think that's wrong. I don't think that's fair because homelessness is a state of mind. That's how I feel as far as homeless. It's a state of mind. And just because you're doing better than somebody or somebody you see somebody as being below you don't mean that they're below you. You know, that's why I feel it's a state of mind.
So, Cornell, I'm hearing from you. You know, Patrick described the way people who walk down the street might ignore you, as if they can't even see you. Mm-hmm. You're also describing the way some people might taunt you or yell at you in different ways. Mm-hmm. How often, if you're just trying to guess here, for every 10 people who might pass by you when you were either at Sanctuary Village in the tents or wherever you happen to be during the day, out of 10 people, how many would be kind or would actually say a kind hello to you?
I'd say about 30%.
Maybe 3 out of 10?
Maybe 3 out of 10.
Patrick and Don, would you guys?
I'd say maybe 2 or 3 people.
I agree with that.
Okay, yeah, that's an estimate. So most people are not offering any sort of kind interaction?
No. I mean, there's a lot of people who care once they find out what's truly going on, but beforehand, without knowing, no, I stick to that 30%.
Okay. What does it feel like when you get ignored?
It's embarrassing. I mean, I've learned to close it out, you know, to ignore it, but a lot of people can't do that because it hurts their feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, just because they're not doing good in life don't mean they should be shunned upon.
And you brought up the time that the city of Rochester is, in your words, bulldozed Tent City. I think that was going up on 3 years now, something like
yeah.
that. I think the yeah. December
yeah.
2015.
And I was living in one of the tents.
Right around the holidays. Is that still an incident that people remember and are hurt by?
I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. Because all my personal belongings, all my identification was thrown into a dumpster. Then somebody got on the air and claimed that they were storing, they were placing it in the dumpster to store it for us. It's, you can plainly see that they were throwing it away.
Let me turn to James Murphy, a Catholic worker from St. Joe's House of Hospitality. What did you think when you saw the story of Mr. Torres on the train?
I wasn't surprised by the reaction. I think what I see a lot is people who are homeless, and I think, you know, Patrick was talking about people who are sanctioned or on welfare, and in order to keep that, oftentimes they have to, you know, go to group alcohol, group sessions, maybe group mental health sessions, and they're embarrassed to go because they haven't showered. They've, you know, probably had a rough night sleeping outside or in a shelter where it's very difficult to get a good night's sleep. So I think it's pretty common to have that reaction. And I think you have that reaction as long as we separate ourselves. We're a very separate society today. People don't take the time to know the other. They're afraid of the other. Homeless people or people going through homelessness are really just as afraid as, you know, that group walking by that Patrick was talking about. And, you know, so I think the major issue is we're just not getting to know one another. And people ask me all the time, how can they help? How can they get involved
yeah.
at St. Joe's? And they always want to work in our kitchen or give us clothing for our shelter or our clothing closet, or but you know, I always encourage people to just come in, and our doors open every morning at 9 a.m. and we serve coffee and donuts, and just come in and hang out and get to know people and get to talk to people and hear their stories. And you know, not only at St. Joe's, but there are many places. People want to, they want to serve, which is good. You know, we should be serving one another. But I think just the gift of presence, of our presence, of on both sides is what's needed. And there are many places to go. The Blessed Sacrament dinner program, rather than, you know, sitting or standing behind a table with, you know, plastic gloves and a spoon mm-hmm. and get on the other side, stand in line. Be in solidarity, sit down, have a meal, do it regularly, do it consistently, get to know people. Asbury has a breakfast program. There are many opportunities in Rochester to be in solidarity with people who are struggling. And it's an important way of engaging. It's important to hear stories, to understand what is going through. So when you see a man shaving on a train, you might think a little more. You might recognize some of the signs of someone, you know, homeless. You know, you can often tell by their clothing. There are telltale signs that yeah. someone is struggling, and we won't be so quick to judge. But the major problem I see is that we just don't know the other, and we're too afraid to take action to get to know one another.
So let's do this. But for the listeners who are hearing this going, you're right. You know what? I could go have a meal. I could get in line with someone. I could be on that side. Tell our listeners again where they might be able to do that.
Asbury, they do a meal program. I think it starts at 7 a.m. Tuesday through Saturday. I would go online and check these places out.
Sure.
Make sure you got the time. St. Peter's Kitchen, Blessed Sacrament. St. Joe's has lunch every day. House of Mercy has three meals a day. You know, there are just Google it. You'll find many opportunities to have an opportunity to be in solidarity with people, and you'll learn more about the problems.
Yeah.
You'll learn,
because
we know the statistics. We know intellectually what's wrong, but on a personal level, we don't know what that means. So, you know, 900 people sleeping in a shelter in Monroe County every night is just a number. Until you walk into a shelter and see it and meet people, it just doesn't mean anything. And it's the, you know, we are called as, you know, so the Catholic Worker has been around for 76 years in Rochester. And one of the major things that we promote, or one of the kind of the foundations of the movement, is called personalism. And that's being personally responsible for our brothers and sisters. And that also means getting to know that person. And when we know that person, we know how we can truly help them rather than how we think they need help. You know, raising $40,000 for this gentleman is great for that one particular person. But there are systematic issues that need to be addressed. And we're just not doing that now.
Yeah, I feel like in listening to these stories and the insight from our guests, there's two very different things at play when we try to learn the lessons from what we're looking at with Patrick Torres, the man on the train whose video, the video of him went viral. He was shaving on a public train from Manhattan to New Jersey, and he had been homeless. And, of course, he was mocked for shaving. I think to James's point, most of the people around him on the train weren't asking him. Mm-hmm. They were snickering at him under their breath. They were sneaking mm-hmm. videos of him, but they weren't saying, hey, what's up? What's going on? Can I help you? And therefore, all of a sudden, it's millions of views later that somebody figures out what the circumstances were. So that goes to that personal barrier we put up. And then there's the systemic issues of the Rochester Homeless Union that Patrick, I think, was speaking so eloquently about, all the things that they're trying to address on a systemic, at the big level, at the policy level. Let's just ask one more quick question before we bring in Professor Harry Murray on this. I want to ask, just on that personal side, I'm going to go back to Patrick. It was the last night, people walking down the street, right? Mm-hmm. Two men, one woman, getting out maybe out of a restaurant or somewhere downtown. They're walking past. You're there with a group of people who might be homeless. You just say, hello, how you doing tonight? They don't even look at you. They walk right on by. And as you say, maybe they're worried that you're going to ask for money. It can be a delicate, hard moment. But I think we can do more, and I want to ask you what you want. And I know it sounds strange, but like let's be direct about this. What do you hope for? Just I guess just an interaction, talk to you like we're all equal people, I think. Mm-hmm. But what are you hoping for, Patrick?
I'm hoping for people to stop stereotyping others, especially the homeless individuals. They're people too. They're human. They respect you, respect them, even if they're in a situation. And if at all possible, maybe just a simple conversation will give a person a part of their character back, you know, to know that they're human. You don't have to get up, hit your pockets to help someone. Sometimes a simple conversation or a bit of respect can enable an individual to want to go forth. And you're stereotyping them, and that allows them to stereotype you. They want to stay away from society because they look down upon, because it's hard to determine whether a guy in a suit actually will give you 2 minutes of conversation. How was your day? Instead of looking at me snobbish, like you can care less, you little, you know, homeless, you know.
Yeah.
That's very important, to have a compassion, to have a concern, to be concerned about your brother, your sister. We're all brothers and sisters here. I mean, and somewhere in your family, somewhere, you got individuals that are running and struggling through the same thing that person you passed by and just disregarded.
Yeah.
Everybody's not perfect, and everything is not handed to people. Sometimes people struggle, you know. That's what I like.
Don, how would you answer that?
Well, you know, I'm a cook at the House of Mercy, and we serve at least 650 people a day. So when some of them come in, they had maybe eaten in days. They may haven't been out there all night long. I still have to look at them as I see myself. Because even though the world treats you like that, I have an opportunity to help you. Because if you've never been in that position to where people look down on you, people talk about you, you are a human being and it hurts. This place is hurting bad. We have elected officials that say that they care. We invite them over to the House of Mercy time and time again. Their mouths say that, but what do their hearts say? And when I walk out on the street like him and I look at these people, I put myself in their position because I've been looked down on. I've been talked about. Yeah, it hurts, but I have to keep going on. And my thing of it is this. We have to educate our people. You are a human being. You are somebody. Yes, God love you. Yes, I love you. It's many times that I've sat and see people cry. And many times that you sit and see homeless people like they got no hope. It just go on daily, man. We talk about the homeless at night. I walked on the street to see 600 to 1,000 people on the side. They're hungry. What is wrong with our officials? We need to turn this thing around. We're asking them, come to the homeless shelter. Come to St. Joe. Come talk to us. We're human beings just like you. We hurt just like you. You may be in my position one day. It may look like not, but guess what? What affect me will affect you down the line of time. And it hurts. You walk around and you see this every day. I cook every day. I see these people come in. I haven't eaten in days. I don't know where I'm going to get my next meal from. And it hurts. Yes, I am a preacher, but it hurts just to see a human being suffer like this. And we have officials that we put into position that you are supposed to come and help me and look at me. And you only come to me when you need my help to get my vote. Otherwise, you don't come to me. But you say you care, but you will agree that the system is broken. But we are human beings, like he said. I may not shave like Mr. Harry. I may not walk like James. I may not smell, and I serve every day. So when they come through the line, they may not smell too good, but they are human beings. I have to overlook the smell. I have to look at his heart to see that, how can I help him? And this is the problem. Just like the guy that was on the train, you look down on him. But it was somebody that had a heart that said, you know what? Let me look at this thing because this can be me. Out of all the people that passed him by, somebody had a heart. And I thank you for allowing us to come on this show to tell people we are human beings. We are the homeless union. We are trying to make a difference with this sanction. We are trying to get this thing to where to get the governor attention, to get the mayor attention, to get the legislature attention, to get all of these local people attention. This is what we're trying to do. We're trying to bring change to Rochester. Instead of being number one in unemployment, instead of being number one that the slumlords are coming in, you are letting them do anything. But then again, you want to tell us you're helping us. How are you helping us when you want to even come and sit down at my table and talk to me?
Real quick here before I turn to Cornell for that. It's always hard to follow Don. First of all, I appreciate you saying thank you for letting come on the show, but this is a community show, and we are all equal in this community, and I no problem following your direction to say I love you more often. So I love you, and I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, buddy.
Is there a difference in your mind, Don, between political parties, Democrats, Republicans? Do they show up? I mean, does it matter to you? You're not seeing a difference?
I don't, because here is my part. We're all human beings. Yeah. We're all Christians. Yeah. I don't separate the parties. They separated the parties. Like I say, we're stigmatized. And when you're stigmatized, I'm a Democrat. You're a Republican. But when you look at it, do the Republicans going to say, I'm helping you? Do the Democrats going to say, I'm helping you? No. As a human being, I'm helping you. Ain't none of that counts. Long as you helping me, that what counts.
All right. Well, strong stuff. Cornell, how do you feel when, back to the the original question was just, you know, what you want to see from your fellow human beings who might, you know, if you're in that spot, which you have been in the past, of homelessness, what you want?
I would ask those who haven't experienced homelessness or those who are in power or have the power to change or make changes, to open their minds and open their hearts, and show some true heartfelt compassion.
What's that look like to you? Just a conversation? Just the warmth of a handshake?
It's a little more than that.
Yes,
it would take concern. I mean, heartfelt concern, mm-hmm. you know, not just saying we're going to do this or we're going to try to do it, but to actually do it because you have the power to do it. Don't tell me you're going to do it. Just do it.
I hear you. Let me turn the microphone over to Harry Murray, who is a professor of sociology at Nazareth College and the coordinator of the Peace and Justice major at Nazareth. And Professor Murray has done quite a lot of research when it comes to understanding homelessness in Rochester, understanding mortality of homelessness. And I guess I want to ask you how you related to the video that got us all talking, of the man on the train who was shaving.
Actually, I haven't seen the video.
Oh,
I've only
wow.
heard people talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it sounds like something that I've been witnessing for decades. I started working with folks who were homeless back in the 1970s, and so I have kind of a long-term perspective. And, you know, the tales that folks would tell me back then of being turned out of public places, of being turned out of businesses or restaurants because they have no money, and just being treated as less than human, that's something that's been going on for a real long time.
And I think your work helps inform what we understand about what it means to be homeless, what it means to be chronically homeless, what we know about lifespan. I mean, lifespans are horrifically short for people who experience homelessness, particularly chronic homelessness, and we've talked about that on this program. Are you starting to see any sort of policy movement that addresses this specifically? And again, this is not meant to be partisan. This is not a partisan conversation. Are you seeing policy that addresses this?
I think there have been some movements towards policy that addresses this. One of the big components is welfare sanctions, which I have been studying. But other components include housing, and a key component is providing access to affordable housing to people. I think we need to start thinking about housing as a human right. We need to start addressing the huge number of evictions that occur in Monroe County, which are along with sanctions a prime cause of homelessness. In New York State, passed a law a couple of years ago restricting the way that New York City could do employment sanctions and to people who were on public assistance. Mm-hmm. And the number of employment sanctions in New York City dropped precipitously to the point where currently, there are more people on employment sanctions in Monroe County than there are in all of New York City, which that only happened in 2017. Applying that law across the state, I think, would be not the solution, but would be one major step that we could make. I think we also need to look at the way that Monroe County does durational drug and alcohol sanctions. We have more durational drug and alcohol sanctions recipients than all of New York City, despite the fact that New York City's public assistance population is well more than 10 times the public assistance population in Monroe County. I mean, that number, when I started looking at the state statistics published by OTDA, that just stunned me. I almost immediately called up James and started telling people about it, because I mean, it was just unimaginable that we could have more people under sanction than New York City.
Under sanction, which, by the way, in a moment, I'm going to take a phone call from a listener who's got a question about this very subject. But when you say under sanction, it means what?
Under sanction means that you are not eligible for any welfare benefits. Durational sanctions mean that you are not eligible for a specific amount of time, which can range up to at least 180 days.
Because of drug or alcohol use?
Well, there are numerous reasons that you can be sanctioned. Okay. Some can be employment issues.
Okay.
Some can be failing a drug or alcohol test. Some can be not making a meeting for a drug and alcohol program.
Which we talked about. Mm-hmm. Patrick kind of at length explained why that can be so difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this was some years ago, but I had a friend who was staying in a homeless shelter who was sanctioned because he missed an appointment because he was having emergency brain surgery. And he was supposed to, apparently get up from his emergency brain surgery and call them and reschedule his appointment.
Why is the system so inflexible that it literally cannot figure out that if you're having surgery, you might not make an appointment and you might not deserve a sanction? Why?
Well, I would say that's a conscious decision made by welfare officials and that it's, you know, I think Monroe County is particularly egregious in New York State, but that's a longstanding attitude of welfare. When, just to give one example, when in 1974, Richard Nixon created the Supplemental Security Income Program, which took aged, blind, and disabled persons off of the state welfare systems and put them onto the federal SSI program run by Social Security. That was known as Nixon's good deed, because Social Security is a bureaucracy and it treats you like a bureaucracy, but it doesn't usually have the special venom that you often encounter in welfare agencies.
You use the word venom. I mean, that's akin to malice. And so if the system says to somebody, oh, you missed this meeting. Oh, you were having surgery? Well, too bad. You're going to be sanctioned. You're going to lose benefits. That is malicious. That is venomous. And I've got this naive hope that I look for the good in people. And so I assume that actually what's going on is the system isn't staffed well enough to sort out and figure out, and the sanction applies automatically. Am I wrong here? I mean, is there real malice in the system?
Well, I would look at as a sociologist, I would look at the malice as being in the system, not in the people.
Okay,
there are
fair
many,
enough.
Many very good people.
Fair enough. The construct
working
of the system that this happens at all is malicious if this can happen.
It is. And I would say It is malicious.
Okay.
In 1974, I was a consultant with the New York State Department of Social Services, mm-hmm. it was called then, during the SSI implementation. And I remember one day meeting with two of the people in Albany who wrote the regulations. And they told me in the privacy of their office that we write the regulations to make the application process as onerous and difficult as possible, because we don't even have to reject people unless they complete the application process. So the more people we can discourage from finishing, the less paperwork we have to do, the less we have to record those numbers. Financially, there is, I think, a big incentive for county governments to keep the welfare rolls down, and I think that. And it really goes back to the 19th century and the whole poorhouse establishment. That attitude towards welfare has persisted throughout American history. Welfare has always been looked upon as kind of a handout to people who are, quote, the undeserving poor. Mm-hmm. And frankly, American welfare was at its most generous back in 1968, when the average welfare payment was about 73% of the poverty level. Welfare never brings people out, or rarely brings people out of poverty. And, you know, welfare payments have gone down dramatically since then. And in many states, they're maybe a third of the wealth of the poverty level.
All right, some feedback from listeners. Chuck says on Twitter, why do we need to shame anybody? Instead of breaking each other down, why can't we build each other up? We are all on the same team here. Jill says, yes, 100% agree with that. Shame and fear are such horrible things to feel and project. How about instead we model kindness and compassion? A woman who writes to us anonymously says, I do not know anything about what the man reported concerning asking the people he saw on the street how they were. That was Patrick's story. But she says, I do know that girls are taught to not engage with men who approach them. And when they become women, they continue to have concerns about being greeted, approached by strangers on any street. A woman cannot read a man's mind and cannot make assumptions about intent. I say hello to people who are strangers to me all the time, but I know that certain times of day and certain places, it might not seem normal. And I think about how that stranger might misinterpret my intent there. So that comes from a woman who says she doesn't want to be rude, but women are taught to be careful. I think there's some nuance here. I mean, I understand what she's saying, but I think there's also some real callousness and rudeness to people who... you're nodding, Don. What do you make of the email there?
Well, I understand that, but as a Christian, it says greet people and greet people with kindness. And my thing of it is this: there's all kind of people in this world. But what do you think about a person in your heart? Even if I speak to you and you don't speak to me, guess what? I've done what I was supposed to do. And my thing of it is this: we have this fear if we say something to people, sometimes the way people look. Because I tell you, I get it all the time. I work in homeless shelter. Sometimes they come, they don't smile. But I have to look within, not without. We have a tendency to look on the outside instead of look what's on the inside of a person. And when you begin to look on the outside of a person, your judgment starts. But if you look at their hearts and begin to see, then you'll begin to, many times, like I say, I'll start smiling. People come up to me, you just made my day. But it's because what I see in your heart, not just what I'm judging what's on your face.
Well, you are infectious. I'll give you that, Don. I certainly feel that about you. Cornell, what would you say to the woman who emailed to say she doesn't want people to take it the wrong way, but there are times women in particular might be less likely to engage with anyone on the street?
I don't know. I think... that would be based on their characteristics, because the people that I believe he's talking about were adults.
Yeah.
So as far as not talking to strangers or being fearful of talking to somebody on the street, I think that's I don't think it's right to feel that way.
No.
I really don't. Because like me being a grown man, if I'm walking down the street and somebody, I don't care who it is, speaks to me, I'm going to speak back regardless who they are.
Okay. Patrick.
Well, I'm listening, everybody, different people's opinion, but I knew exactly what it was. I mean, I was taught somebody speaks to me, and I was raised properly. If somebody's walking past me and speaks, how you doing? I'd be like, all right, how you doing? Thank you for asking. You know, probably keep on walking. They were looking down on those people. They didn't even want to have an association with them. I recognize that, you know. I'm a people person. I've been around, and I'm around a lot of people. That's what it was about. Mm-hmm. And I was one of those people that was standing up dirty. I'm dirty, just got off of work, looked really bad, mud all on me and stuff because I was working on the ground. And they looked at me like I was a nobody as well, you know, and just kept on walking. Now, if I'd have been dressed properly or just came out, showered or whatever, and say, hey, how you doing? I probably could have got a handshake out of any one of them.
Harry, you want to add to that before we have to go here?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the fear that women have of men can be very real, but it's not confined to poor men or homeless men. The Me Too movement has shown that maybe the greatest danger to women is in the workplace. You know, that it comes that... they can be abused, they can be hurt from men in the positions of authority. So, it's not just a matter of homelessness. There is a real gender issue that we need to deal with here.
Okay, fair enough here. About 1 minute left here. Patrick, I'm going to give you the last word. What I want to do is got to be quick.
Okay.
What's your priority list? If you could get city leaders, county leaders, government leaders in a room, and you want them to listen on what needs to start changing, what are you going to get?
Stop the sanctions.
Stop the sanctions.
Stop sanctioning individuals. Give them a chance. Because you're completely snatching the chance out away from them when you take away their last opportunity to receive welfare from this Monroe County.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don, you agree?
I agree with him. Let your word be your bond. Most of them don't have words. And this is where the separation comes. Let your word be your bond. If you tell me you're going to do something, do it.
Don and Patrick are leaders in the Rochester Homeless Union. We've appreciated their insight. Cornell Davis, Harry Murray from Nazareth College, James Murphy, a Catholic worker from St. Joe's House of Hospitality. And again, if you think about what James said earlier, we've got a lot of opportunities if we seek them out. You want to grab it? Do it quick here, James. Go ahead.
Yeah, tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at St. Joe's, we're having a volunteer information night for our shelter. 402 South Avenue, we need volunteers. Last year we provided 4,000 beds during the winter season, and we cannot do it without volunteers. So if you're interested, there's a great way to plug in and be in immediate solidarity in our shelter.
Tomorrow night, 6 p.m., and where?
St. Joe's House of Hospitality, 402 South Avenue.
Thank you for the work that you do. And thanks to all of you for sharing your insight here. We appreciate you. Patrick, if you want to do it, got to do it in about 6 seconds.
And as well, we have meetings at the House of Mercy, 6:30 on Tuesday nights for the Rochester Homeless Union.
6:30 Tuesday nights, House of Mercy. Thanks, everyone. More connections coming.